Welcome to Search the Scriptures, your Internet Sunday School class. As you join with us today to study the Word of God, I highly recommend that you download the PDF file of the outline to have with you as you listen. It will be referred to regularly. But today we start a new topic related to our old topic. Finished poverty, so of course we have to do wealth. And as you would expect, what Proverbs has to say about wealth is very often the opposite of what it has to say about poverty. As we look at the Proverbs on wealth, it becomes clear that wealth and poverty are very much used by this father, this teacher, as the carrot and the stick. If you behave this way, you're more likely to end up with wealth, so you need to behave this way. And if you behave this way, you're more likely to end up in poverty, so you really need to behave this way to avoid poverty. So using it as a tool to try to shape the behavior of the student with both promises and threats. But at the same time, just like we saw in the Proverbs on poverty, while he'll say, if you're lazy, you'll be poor. You know, if you love luxury, you'll be poor. If you do all these things, you'll be poor. But when he then actually talks about the poor, he never says poor people are lazy, poor people are, you know, whatever, gluttons. Doesn't have anything negative to say about them when he talks about actual poor people. When it gets to riches, wealth, he's going to do pretty much the same thing. He's going to say, you know, here's what leads to wealth, and these things lead to wealth, and if you do this, it leads to wealth, and these are all good things. But when he actually talks about rich people, he doesn't have anything nice to say about them. Basically, it's mainly warnings to them about the dangers of being rich. You know, Proverbs can't be looked at as some kind of how to get rich scheme, because it's not. And it's clear that the father's goal here is not to have the child end up rich. He just doesn't want him to be wicked. And the carrot that he uses is that this tends more towards, let's say, rich life, but at least a non-poor life. When it comes to riches, we saw all the different words for poor man. There's different terms for a poor person. In Proverbs, there's only one term in the whole Old Testament for rich person. It's the same word every time. There are different words for riches and wealth and treasure and substance and things and possessions. There are lots of different words for that. But as far as a rich person, the rich man, being rich, there's only one word. Well, why do you think that would be? Why would there only be one word for rich? Why would there be so many for poor?
It would be just as many different experiences of rich too, but because maybe poor would have many different connotations to it, and where in this case he's just talking about somebody with money.
Yeah, there's kind of different levels of poor. There's really, really poor, and there's I'm dying. Some people who are called poor, obviously they have food, they're not starving, but they don't have any power. They're taken advantage of. They're poor in that sense. They're downtrodden. They're oppressed. You know, there are different nuances of poor, different levels of poor. But rich, essentially, if you have an abundance above what you need, you're rich. Rich just means you've got more than you need. And so it covers an enormous category of people, all the way from kings to people who just happen to have enough land to make more than enough to support themselves. So there's not really a differentiation between the rich. They're just rich. So we'll begin, as we did with the Proverbs on poverty, with causes. How do you get to be rich? And the primary thing is wisdom. Repeatedly, Proverbs says that wisdom is the route to riches. In 3:13-16, it says, happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding, for, I think it says, in her right hand is long life, and her left hand riches and honor. So the person who finds wisdom, what does that sound like? You find wisdom.
You're hunting for it?
Searching. It, you know, some people could read that as almost like, you know, oh, I stumbled across this. Mm-hmm. I was going down the street and I found some wisdom. Mm-hmm. But here it's more of a, I have acquired it, I've attained it, I was searching for it, and was able to get it.
there's more of a idea of effort here. I was searching for something and found it. In verse 14 says, "For the merchandise of it, that is wisdom, is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof of fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared with her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor." Length of days is in her right hand. If there's any difference between something being in her right hand and her left, what would it be? Yeah, generally in the Old Testament and in all wisdom literature of that time, the thing in the right hand was the more valuable. That would be the thing that was the best. And his length of days is in her right hand, long life. And in her left hand, riches and honor. And you can see how they would work together, though. It's like, what good is length of days if you don't have riches and honor? You're just poor for a really long time. Or what good is riches and honor if you don't live very long to enjoy it? So she presents both of these things. Riches and honor. And these words occur together a lot. Riches and honor. What does that signify?
People look up to those who are rich.
Okay, yeah, you've got the riches, which is the stuff.
They're esteemed.
Yeah, and then there's the kind of the social esteem that comes from having the stuff. You know, you were looked up at in society the more you have. And so she's saying that you get riches and the esteem that goes with having the wealth. But it's interesting, these terms outside of Proverbs, whenever they occur together, always occur in one particular context. Who is it that has riches and honor other than the Lord, of course? Who in the Old Testament? The kings. Said of the kings a lot throughout Kings and Chronicles and various places it talks about. And of course then even in Revelation 5:12 says that the Lord Christ has riches and honor. It's really kind of like a royal thing, a royal term, riches and honor. Just any number of kings that is said of them that they were blessed with riches and honor. Solomon, who did not ask for riches and honor, so the Lord gave him wisdom and riches and honor. David thanked the Lord for riches and honor. Therefore the Lord established the kingdom in his hand, and all Judah brought to Jehoshaphat presents, and he had riches and honor. So Jehoshaphat is one. Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor. Ahasuerus in Esther had riches and honor. So it's used of even foreign kings. It's a term, status and wealth. And usually associated with someone who's ruling.
I was just kind of wondering, when you talk about the riches, the wisdom in the right hand, and then having riches and honor, and you could have riches and not have honor too.
True.
Nabal was, he was rich, but he was not an honorable man.
Right.
Does wisdom not just bring riches, but it also brings honor?
Right. It would be important to have them both together. As he said, you could be rich, but hated, and not as much fun to be rich, I guess, when you're hated. But anyway, so wisdom, says, finding wisdom, searching for it, brings that. In 8:18, says essentially the same thing. This is wisdom talking. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. Lasting riches, riches and honor that will last, which gives you a clue to one of the subtexts of Proverbs, is that you can get riches and honor that don't last. You can get rich in other ways than they say here. You can get rich by doing wrong. The emphasis in Proverbs, though, is that it doesn't last. It's not durable. However, it is possible to do it. 8:21, again, this is wisdom speaking, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. Their treasures. What are treasures? You're going to fill their treasures. I can understand filling something with treasures.
My translation says their treasuries.
Yeah, this is a treasure house, a place where you keep stuff. He says, I'm going to fill that. I'm going to cause those that love me to inherit substance and fill up their storehouses. 14:24, the crown of the wise is their riches. 21:20, there is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise. And if you look at 21:20, there is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. So what does it mean to say there's treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise? What's the contrast they're trying to tell you between the fool and the wise person? What does the fool do?
He squanders his wealth.
Yeah, he spends it up right away. And so part of what this verse is saying is the wise person will have treasure and oil because they're wise and know that not to spend it up, not to use it, not to burn through it, if you put it that way. That's how the wise person gets it, by accumulating it. And one of the things that Proverbs stresses is not to try to get rich quick, but by slow labor and just methodically adding to it and accumulating slowly is the way to do it. And one of the ways you do that is by not consuming it. Or as we saw the other day, don't buy stuff you can't afford. Don't spend your money as soon as you get it and say, you know, I want more, because then you won't have any. You know, the old saying, you can't have your cake and eat it too. It is true. If you eat it, you no longer have it. The thing with money, you can't have money and spend it too, because once you spend it, it's gone. So the wise person has this because they don't consume it. 24:4 says, and by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all precious and pleasant riches. So this wisdom and the knowledge and understanding that comes with it leads to riches. Okay, how? How does being wise make you rich? Being wise, having wisdom, you will then know what to do to accumulate wealth. Okay, and that's probably what is getting at here, is that by having this wisdom, that you will understand what to do, and you'll know how then to accumulate wealth. But it also, it kind of presents it here, especially the personifications of wisdom in chapter 3 and chapter 8, as almost like if you love wisdom, then you will be given the stuff. It's not that wisdom shows you how you go about and do it, but wisdom provides it. When you can say, well, it provides it by telling me how to do what I need to do to get it. But we're going to come back to that question in just a little bit. So wisdom, being wise, pursuing wisdom is one way to accumulate wealth. The second one is by diligent labor. Kind of expect this after we saw what we saw about the poor. 10:4 says, the hand of the diligent maketh rich. 12:27, the substance of a diligent man is precious. That is, he won't waste it. 13:4, the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. What does that mean?
I was thinking about this and I thought, is there any sense in which pride cannot be sinful? And it's not I don't think it's a pride of look what I've done, but it's a sense of satisfaction of seeing all the planning and all the hard work pay off. I think there may be something to that here, and that could, the soul shall be made fat, that might be a way to describe that. It's the soul of a person, so it's kind of like what someone would do after a lot of labor and planning, and they see things worked out, and they just kind of sit back and, you know, it's a thankfulness too that God has allowed this to happen. You know, they're not necessarily claiming ownership on all of it and saying, look what I've done. It's more of a, I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm glad things worked out. This is, you know, a marvelous in our eyes kind of a thing. And it's just like you're cogitating on it, you're meditating on it, and there's a richness, a fullness to it. Enlargement of that meditation and that appreciation.
And you're taking the word soul there to mean their inner person, their,
yeah, if you want to call it that, not their outer person. But you know, I'm picturing right now a farmer knowing all the planning that went into, all right, here's a little forested area, I'm going to go in, clear the trees out, pull the stumps out. Here's an area over here, it's a sunken area, I want to block that off and make it into a pond, water source for animals. And over the years, they do all this. And then they see it come to fruition. They're growing crops. They have their cattle or sheep or whatever. They have a water supply. You know, everything just worked out. Yeah, there were hard times, but they sit back and they look at all that, and you know, it's not, wow, look what I did. It's not that. It's more of a, I'm so glad things worked out, and I'm appreciative of the Lord for blessing me. But they had a lot to do with that blessing.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting kind of tensions in Proverbs is it the person's doing that did it, or is it the Lord giving it to them that did it? What is the responsibility of each? And we're going to see some verses on that as well in just a minute. But
would you agree with that? Does that make sense, or is that my way?
No, I understand that. The other thing, soul also in Proverbs often means your physical life. The first part of the verse says, "The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing; the soul of the diligent shall be made fat." And it could mean just bodily desires. They want something, and the sluggard doesn't get it because they won't do anything to get it. And the person who's diligent made fat in a more physical sense. Not that they got fat, but they got the good things. The fat was the good things.
This could be translated,
which they claim is not in the Bible.
Yeah. We're going to see something close to it, but it actually kind of says the opposite in just a minute. But anyway, 13:11 says, "He that gathereth by labor shall increase." And a lot of these are kind of agricultural metaphors, because most of the people were farmers. So gathering by labor, gathering by hand, you know, talking about farming. 21:5, "The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness." Okay, what does that mean? Their thoughts.
Plans.
Yeah, the planning. That this, again, it's not haste. It's not, I need to go out and get some money real quick. It's planning. It's like Mike was saying, it's having the long-term goal and what you're going to do. You plan it out and you work on it. Says the diligent person plans, and that will lead to plenteousness.
And the second half of that verse says, "But everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty." Mm-hmm. Makes me think of the lotteries.
And we're going to talk about that too in just a little bit. And you know, it's funny, a lot of scams are premised on the idea of, you know, you're going to make a lot of money really fast. Oh, you know, man, just, if you can give me $10,000 today, this can't lose on this deal. We're going to triple your money in a day. Just, you know, give me, and then they disappear with your money.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the email from Nigeria. If you will just, you know, give me your bank account, I will give you this $1 million and you will hold it for me. And, yeah. Okay. It's easy. It's so fast. I mean, you can make a buck like that. Usually it's a scam. It's a way to lose your money. All right, diligent labor. Then the next one is something we saw a little bit of when we looked at poverty, which is generosity. Giving it away leads to getting more of it. I'm going to start with 11:25 real quick. 11:25 says, "The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself." Literally says the soul of blessing. The person who blesses other people with what he's got, he will be made fat. His soul will be made fat. And he that watereth shall be watered also himself. So the idea of giving it away is a way to get back. But 3, 9, and 10 is one I wanted to look at also, because it brings up an issue. I was going to look at it in wealth and poverty, but we didn't get a chance to. "Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine." Okay, honor the Lord with thy substance and the first fruits. What does that mean? So what is he telling us to do exactly?
Now, back in the law, they talked about how much they had to give and when they had to give, and they referred to that as the first fruits, right?
Well, there was one specific ceremony of the first fruits, which was when, probably not first in time, but first in quality, and it was not a large amount of food, because you're supposed to put it in a basket and take it to the temple. So it was kind of like you take the best and went and offered it. And then, of course, there was the tithe, and there were some other offerings that went along with them. So you're supposed to honor the Lord with your substance, with the first fruits. So how do you do that? What do you do with it? And we'll take it out of today's realm. Let's just go back to that time. I'm living now at this time, and I'm told to honor the Lord with my substance and my first fruit. What do I do?
Isn't it an offering at the temple?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Offering in what way?
Exodus 23:19 says you should bring the choice first fruits of your soil into the house of the Lord.
And
did that go to the priest? I can't remember where the first fruit offering went to.
Those of you who were in my Deuteronomy class 8 years ago and don't remember, I'm ashamed of you. The law did have a lot to say about it. There was the tithe. When you tithe, what did you tithe? A tithe is what? 10% of what?
Food.
You never tithe money. Matter of fact, you couldn't tithe money. It had to be food. They said if you live too far from the temple, you could take a tenth of your food, convert it to money, go to the temple, but when you went there, then you had to buy food with it. But what did they do with it? Fed the priests and who else? The poor. Tithing was eaten. It was eaten by you and by the priests and by the poor. It was a food program. It was meant to feed people. They didn't take it to the temple and burn it up. They were forbidden to burn it. But it was a means of gathering food. Deuteronomy 14, starting in verse 22, says, thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. What do you do with it? And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of thy corn and of thy wine and of thy oil and of the firstlings of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God. You eat it. That's what you do with it. Verse 24, and if the way be too long for thee, it's too long to go to Jerusalem, or back then before there was a temple in Jerusalem, wherever the tabernacle was, if it's too long for you to go there, so that thou shalt are not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and thou shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or for whatever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household, and the Levite that is within thy gates. Thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years thou shalt bring forth the tithe of all thine increase the same year, and shall lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come, and shall eat, and be satisfied that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the works which thy hand doeth. The Levites could not feed themselves. They had no land. So where are they going to get food from? They can't grow it. They can't raise food. Without land, they can't raise animals. So the only way they have to eat is if people give them food, which is what the tithe was for. It's for the Levites, but it was also for the poor and for the person given the tithe. You were supposed to eat it too and rejoice. Part of what tithing was for was to force you to enjoy what God had blessed you with, made you eat it. And it says, you go buy whatever your heart lusts after, it says. Anything you want. Wine, strong drink, beef, anything. Buy it, enjoy it. And you eat it with your friends, with your neighbors. Then there's also first fruits, which says pretty much the same thing. You can't burn it. So what are you supposed to do with it? Deuteronomy 15:19-23. All the firstling males that come out of thy herd and of thy flock shalt thou sanctify unto the Lord thy God. Thou shalt do no work with the firstling of thy bullock, nor shear the firstling of thy sheep. Thou shalt eat it before the Lord thy God year by year in the place which the Lord shall choose, and thy household. And if there be any blemish therein, as if it be lame or blind or have any blemish, thou shalt not sacrifice it unto the Lord thy God. Thou shalt eat it within thy gates. The unclean and the clean person shall take it alike, eat it alike, as the roebuck and as the hart. Only thou shalt not eat the blood thereof. You're supposed to take it to the temple and eat it. Unless it was blemished, then you can't take it to the temple, so you just stayed at home and ate it. Either way, the firstling got eaten. 26, Deuteronomy 26, 1 to 11. I'm taking a lot of time on this, but that's okay. It shall come to pass when thou art in the come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance and to possess it and dwellest therein, thou shalt take the first fruit the first of all thy fruit of the earth which the Lord shall bring of thy land that the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shalt put it in a basket, and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt go in unto the priest in those days, and say unto him, and then there's this confession he's supposed to say about basically the history of Israel and what God did for them. It says, and now I behold, I have brought the first fruits of the land which the Lord, which thou, O Lord, hast given me. And thou shalt set it before the Lord thy God, and worship before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice in every good thing which the Lord thy God hath given thee unto thee and unto thine house, thou and the Levite and the stranger which is among you, you eat it. And it goes on and on. All of these offerings like this, you ate them, and you've invited everybody to come and eat with you.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a feast.
When we were in Israel, we were there on one of the. There's a group of that are half Jew and half Arab. So kind of like Arab, so they kind of have a mixed religion. But it was one of their holy days, and I guess we were up in Galilee. They had a temple, not really, not anything fancy, but it was up on the hillside, and you would see the men taking the sheep on their shoulders up there. They were slaughtered, and then they came back down. And they were cooking them. But they were all, it was like a big, huge feast. So it almost gave you a neat picture of what probably went on, there, outside the temple.
And that's what most of the feasts, most of these things are for. It's kind of as a summary passage. Deuteronomy 12, 5 to 7 kind of summarizes the whole thing. But unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even unto his habitation shall ye seek, and thither ye shall come. And thither ye shall bring your burnt offerings, and your sacrifices, and your tithes, and heave offerings of your hand, and your vows, and your freewill offerings, and firstlings of your herd, and of your flocks. And there ye shall eat before the Lord your God. Ye shall rejoice in all that you put your hand unto, ye and your household, wherein the Lord thy God shall bless thee. All of these things were designed to make people eat them. They were to be eaten. That's why tithing was only of food. Day laborers, people who made money, didn't tithe because they had no food. Tithing was done only in food, only in crops that you raised or livestock that you raised, because it was meant to feed people. So when Proverbs says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruit of thy increase, how do you do that? By being generous. And you eat it and you give it to other people to eat. And you know he's talking about agricultural stuff because the rest of the verse says, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. What God gives you in increase agriculturally, you have to then share with other people. You honor the Lord by doing that. And there were ways prescribed in the law for doing it. So generosity was a way to increase wealth. I'm going to hit these next three real quick. Fear of the Lord, 22:4 says, by humility and fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. Literally it says, by humility, the fear of the Lord, riches, honor, life. Probably what it means is by humility comes the fear of the Lord, and as a result of that is riches, honor, and life. So and it starts with humility, which leads you to fear the Lord, and then that will result in riches, honor, and life. 10:22, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Anybody got a different translation for the end of 10:22? Instead of he addeth no sorrow with it? Nothing? Everybody's got the same thing? Well, the word sorrow there is the word for labor, for hard labor, sorrowful toil. Literally what it says is, toil will not add to it, or he won't add toil to it. In other words, the Lord giving it to you is what makes you rich. Working for it doesn't add anything to it. He doesn't add toil to it. He doesn't make you work for it, which sounds contradictory to everything else that he said. But what he's trying to say there is, ultimately, wealth comes from God, and it really isn't dependent upon you. That doesn't mean you can be a slugger. You still can't. You're still supposed to work. But, again, you don't want to be proud. And the way not to be proud is to realize that the Lord gave this to me. No matter what I had, no matter how hard I worked, I only have this because God chose to give it to me. And he could have chosen not to give it to me, even if I was diligent and worked hard and toiled all day and all night. It still ultimately only comes from God. That's what makes you rich. And saying, you know, trying to labor furiously to get it isn't going to do any good if the Lord doesn't give it to you. And the last one, in 15:6, in the house of the righteous or the just is much treasure. So being just, being righteous. So we've only gotten to look at the positive causes. So we will look at the rest of this outline next week.